This podcast is brought to you by Contessa Digital.
You're listening to Things They Don't Tell Her. Everything you don't get taught about periods, pregnancy, and postpartum. I'm going to take you on a journey back to sex ed and teach you what really matters. Ladies, it's time you felt empowered in your bodies. I'm your host, Caitlin Pinder, founder of Her Women's Health, and I'm sharing tips to optimize your fertility, pregnancy, and postpartum journey.
All right. Good morning, listeners. Today, I am joined by Alana from The Mother's Milk to talk all things pregnancy nutrition. Alana is a qualified naturopath with a passion for pregnancy and postpartum nutrition, the mother of a gorgeous little boy with another on the way, and the co-author of Nourished Postpartum, a postpartum recipe book. So thank you so much for your time today and for joining us on the podcast.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to chat with you today.
So to start today's show off, could you share a little bit about your own journey and where your passion for pre and postnatal nutrition stemmed from?
Yeah, definitely. I think my passion for it really began when my sister got pregnant, and I was still studying at the time, but she just wasn't really given any advice of like what she should supplement in pregnancy or what to eat or anything like that. And it really started when she was like trying to conceive. She just didn't know anything about ovulation or like when the best time to try was. Like, yeah, it was just like a huge area. And I was like, I have to teach you about all of this. So obviously I was going through my naturopathy course at the time, and I definitely was like, you know, so keen to learn even more about this area because I wanted to be able to help her and just support her through that. And then definitely my, you know, knowledge about postpartum really changed when she had her first daughter, because I was able to see what she went through and the lack of support that she experienced in that area as well. So I think her sort of journey with conception and pregnancy and postpartum was a huge interest for me, just because I wanted to help her so much. And I do a lot of work in fertility as well. So that's probably, you know, a huge passion area of mine, just because of my own personal journey with fertility and everything like that. So fertility is probably like my huge passion. And then I definitely always see my fertility clients through their pregnancy and then postpartum, and they're always back to me for the next baby and yeah, all of those beautiful things. So I get to work with women for their whole journey of multiple children. And, you know, I think from when I started practicing, some of my clients are back to me now having their third or fourth baby. And wow. Just, yeah, it's so beautiful. And I treat their kids, I treat them. It's amazing. So I get like the whole family.
I love that. And so how did you find having that knowledge set you up for your first pregnancy?
Oh, I felt really great in my first pregnancy in terms of confidence around what to supplement and what to eat, and just also how to navigate through the different symptoms and everything like that. I actually got really bad nausea in my first pregnancy, like really bad nausea and vomiting. And I had it again with this pregnancy now until about 26 weeks. Mm-hmm. And honestly, like every natural remedy under the sun, I was like so excited and so keen. And I was definitely, just not able to manage it with natural medicine, unfortunately. My second pregnancy, I didn't need any medications, which was good. I was able to manage that a little bit better just with what I learned from my first pregnancy. But I needed ondansetron for my first pregnancy, like to make it through. It was such a nightmare. And I didn't really expect that to happen to me because I was like, I know what to do, but definitely gets you. And I think it educated me so much more on, you know, how I can support my clients and, you know, also just to help them also let go a little bit from, you know, if natural medicine isn't able to work, it's okay to need the medication sometimes because the way you feel is rubbish.
And I think there is a lot of pressure on women who fall pregnant to then support themselves through diet and through exercise and good habits. But if they feel nauseous, if they feel shit all the time, having lived that experience, it's much easier to understand that it's not always possible to have the perfect diet and the perfect exercise regime.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I feel like my knowledge set me up to just navigate through pregnancy without any, I guess, fears or concerns. Like I really just really trusted what was happening with my body and just surrendered to it, I guess, because that's sort of, you know, all we can do during pregnancy is it's just a waiting game.
Yeah.
But yeah, I knew how to navigate through the nausea a little bit better with how I could still nourish myself. You know, even though I was at the point in my first pregnancy where I needed medication, I was still able to give my body the nutrients it needed, even though I wasn't able to eat a diverse diet. Like I was eating, you know, pasta and eggplant most days. I don't know why eggplant, but, you know, I was able to really still nourish myself. And I think more women, you know, should be able to get access to that information, because sometimes you do get that concern of like, oh, am I doing something wrong in my first trimester or even longer than that? Or will this have a negative effect on my baby? And it's like, well, no, we need to be able to keep the food down, and we just need to figure out what the food is that you can eat that is still nutritious. So there's lots of different options out there.
Awesome. Could you run us through then some of the things that you think helped the most for setting yourself up to manage the symptom of nausea and still get those nutrients through food?
Yeah. So I went with a lot of like healthy fats was something that worked for me. Now, this isn't something that will work for everyone, because sometimes fat, like high fat foods, can be a bit of a trigger. But avocado was a particular one that I had every day on my toast for breakfast, because obviously it's really high in folate, it's high in vitamin E, it's high in antioxidants. So I was able to stomach avocado, and I knew I was still getting, you know, some nutrition in with my plain toast. And then I was choosing a lot of like either whole grain or pulse pastas, just because they're a bit higher in protein. And that actually satisfied me for longer than, you know, just a plain white piece of toast or something like that. Mm-hmm. So just choosing those options was really helpful. And then just drizzling olive oil on basically everything, because it's, you know, high in healthy fats, obviously, high in antioxidants. It's not particularly high in nutrients that are specifically important for pregnancy, but it is still going to give you those macronutrients that you need, which is obviously a huge concern in the first trimester when you are vomiting a lot and you're not able to keep a lot of food down, is not having your macronutrient requirements and then losing weight. So I was always trying to get my healthy fats in with olive oil or with avocado, with seeds added to things, just to sort of boost up my macronutrients that way.
Awesome. And did you find, in terms of balancing carbohydrates and proteins, that there was often women in that first trimester crave just carbohydrate dense foods? Did you find any ways to add in, as you said, with pastas, choosing sort of pulse pastas and stuff that were higher in protein? Any other ways to get those extra nutrients?
Yeah, definitely. So I think it depends, again, what you can stomach. Like for my clients, I will sort of, we always go through what are you actually able to eat, because everyone will be different. Like some women prefer like plain toast. Other women prefer like fruit and smoothies and like those sorts of things. So we have to like work with what you're able to tolerate. So for me, it was a lot of like bland carbs, like that side of things. So that's why I was choosing like the pulse pastas, because I couldn't really particularly eat meat. I was adding hemp seeds and those sorts of things on top. For other women, I might recommend that they start their day with like a smoothie, because they're able to stomach the fruits and that sort of thing, but we'll put like a little bit of protein powder in there if they can tolerate it. And we just find like the amount that they can tolerate. Also, some women are able to, you know, still have dairy products and they still are able to enjoy that. So we might put Greek yogurt in there, which is high in protein, or we might play around with nut butters and those sorts of things in smoothies or on toast. So I think it always does come back to the individual and what they're able to tolerate. And you do have that sort of sense inside, like even when in your first trimester, like you think of a food and you're like, oh no, I cannot eat that. I know I'm not. And then like, I think you just naturally know what you're going to be able to have and not have. So we sort of, I guess, work from there with their protein sources. But yeah, I think just what I did probably wouldn't work for everyone. Definitely not. So it's always looking at what you can tolerate and then just understanding what your protein sources are, where they're coming from, and then going from there. So like I said, look at what you have, but obviously nuts and seeds, Greek yogurt, certain cheeses, and hemp seeds would always be a good one. Protein powders, just checking that it's, you know, a pregnancy safe one. And then if you can have meats, then definitely include those in your diet.
Amazing. So if a client was to be feeling nauseous or in her first trimester trying to navigate this kind of overwhelm of prenatal vitamins and not knowing how to support herself even through those food aversions and nausea, it's best that she were to book in for a one-on-one consult to get that personalized prescription.
Yeah, so we actually have a pregnancy nutrition course with Mother's Milk as well. So it sort of takes you through the first trimester, second trimester, third trimester, common concerns, and like nausea is one of them. And then we've created with our pregnancy nutrition course a recipe library. So there's a section for like breakfast, lunch, dinner, but there's also like a morning sickness section. So with that section, you get lots of different types of recipes. So some will be smoothies, some will be watermelon and hemp seeds, some will be like more plain pulse pasta with like, you know, how we can add iodine to that is like a little bit of iodized salt or a little bit of seaweed in our popcorn. Like, so there's lots of tips like that. But then if you're feeling as though you do need personal support and you're wanting that one-on-one support, then yeah, you can definitely always book in with a practitioner for a consult to sort of go through what would be best for you in that time. Yeah. But often like we go through those recommendations, and I do also say to my clients, like, it's okay to get through this time. Like, as long as you're able to keep your prenatals down and take your, you know, nutrient supplements, you're still going to be covered with the nutrients you need and the amounts that you need. So it's okay to just be able to stomach food at the moment. Like, if it's going to make you vomit, it's not going to, you know, actually give you any nutrition anyway. You're just bringing it back up. So
yes. Amazing. And I'll link that in the show notes for anyone who is interested, because that sounds like a very thought through resource, and to have the option of all of those recipes available to take the thinking process out of it is very helpful. So I'll definitely link that. Do you want to follow on with the different nutrients you touched on, needing iodine and certain nutrients that are important for fetal development? Could you expand on some of those?
Yeah, 100%. So I'm going to, I guess, go through the nutrients of high importance for pregnancy in general, but everyone, I think it's really important that women know that everyone has a little bit of a different requirement when it comes to specific nutrients based on what their blood test is sort of saying and that sort of thing. So there are certain nutrients which you might not want to supplement in pregnancy if you have great, you know, a nutrient status of it, but other women might be really deficient in certain nutrients and need those. So it's always important to always start with a blood test before you're trying to conceive, if possible, if you're already, you know, there. If you're already pregnant, then definitely, and you haven't had any blood tests done, definitely get them done, you know, as soon as possible. So in our first trimester, and definitely before you fall pregnant, you know, nutrients like folate are really important, making sure that you're having enough choline, B vitamins, particularly B12, will be really important, and iodine is really important. And that's because obviously the neural tube is formed in the first few weeks of pregnancy. So these nutrients help with neural tube formation and help with brain development and nervous system development. And, you know, there's a lot happening for the brain and nervous system in those first few weeks of pregnancy. Often women won't even know they're pregnant, and so many huge processes are happening in that time before they've even gotten that positive result. So if you can start supplementing before pregnancy, that is definitely always best. And those nutrients are definitely, you know, really important ones for women. And then it's definitely important to test your vitamin D levels either as soon as you can in pregnancy or before pregnancy. A lot of women, even here, I live in Queensland, a lot of women are really deficient in vitamin D. And vitamin D is so important for baby, but also for your health. So just really important to make sure that one is never, ever missed. And then iron again. So iron is a really important one when it comes to mum's health and bub's health. So again, something that should be tested before conception, but ideally as soon as possible during pregnancy if you hadn't had any, you know, preconception testing done. When it comes to like the second and third trimester, there is a little bit of a change in terms of what we focus on, like nutrient requirement wise. Obviously, all those nutrients that I already mentioned are really important, but we want to place a huge focus on brain development, especially in the third trimester. So nutrients like essential fatty acids become a little bit more important, and choline becomes very highly important in that time. The requirements for a women in their third trimester for choline are much higher than, say, in their first trimester. So sometimes they even play around with women who are experiencing nausea with their supplement regime in the first trimester. Sometimes certain nutrient supplements can make you feel really nauseous, or taking multiple capsules can make you feel really nauseous. So sometimes we really pair it back in the first trimester, and then we do all of our like makeup work, I call it, in our second, third trimester to sort of bring those nutrient levels up during that time. So those are some pretty important nutrients just as a general whole. But then each woman will have, like I said, different nutrient requirements based on their pathology and based on what their medical history is or what they're currently presenting with. So of course, any woman with a certain medical condition or at risk for certain pregnancy related complications like preeclampsia or gestational diabetes would have, you know, probably a different supplement regime, just to make sure we're trying to manage that and prevent, you know, hypertension or prevent gestational diabetes. It all starts very early in pregnancy. But there are certain factors that obviously put you at risk. So we look at all of those, you know, as early as we can in your pregnancy.
Beautiful. And so if someone was considering getting some bloods done, are these things that a GP would commonly look for if they were to present to a GP in the first trimester?
Yeah, if a good one. I think it's really important, you know, often GPs get a lot of like bad talk, you know, and I'm sure that there's many out there that aren't amazing at their jobs, but you know, I work with amazing GPs that are fantastic at their jobs and always test those bloods. So you know, in the preconception phase, you know, the most important ones are obviously checking all your immunizations and checking you know, for obviously STIs and those sorts of things as well, any infections, and then your nutrients like iron studies, full blood count to check your hemoglobin, your vitamin D levels. What are the other ones that I mentioned? Folate levels. Those are really important. Choline's not usually tested. That's typically something that we do know you have a high requirement, so we will adjust for that in that time. And there are some nutrients that aren't commonly tested by GPs, and more of a functional medicine practitioner or a naturopath will have to test those. And that's okay. Like, GPs can't test everything. They're just not able to. And that's where I come in, you know, and I can do those additional tests depending on what you're presenting with. So some things that women aren't commonly tested for would be zinc and iodine. And I test these relative to the patient. So depending on what my patient presents with, I will either put a high priority on that or not. And if there is a high priority on it, I do ask their GP to test it and give the reasons why. Usually I'll write a referral letter so that we're all working together. And if they don't want to do that, then I just let my client know the costs of it and they can, I can send them to a QML and they can do it that way. But the reason that someone might need a zinc test done, for example, is if they're a vegan or vegetarian, just because zinc is very low in vegan and vegetarian diets, and we do want to make sure that nutrient is optimal for pregnancy. It's so important for so many different functions in the body, but particularly for mom's immune system health throughout pregnancy. She's going to be immune compromised in pregnancy, so we want to make sure that we're always thinking of that ahead of time. And urinary iodine, that is something that I would test depending on my client's diet and thyroid function. So if they had some issues with thyroid health or they had really poor dietary intake, it's something I want to test just because iodine requirements are so important in early pregnancy. And sometimes women are so deficient that they need much higher than what's in a, you know, prenatal as such. And we always test that just to make sure, you know, everything's looking okay, basically. But many women are still eating, you know, iodine-rich foods, particularly iodine are high in like seafood. Seaweed is a really good source of iodine, and dairy products also contain iodine. So more around like vegan, vegetarian sort of style diets, again, or any history of thyroid issues, I would definitely be recommending to test iodine levels.
It's amazing. And ideally, this is something that if they can, a client would start on their preconception journey to start to get some of these things tested.
100%. You know, around that 3 to 6 months before you even start trying would be a good time to go and get your blood test done. Often, you know, women will be really proactive these days. There's a lot more information out there about it. But if you have fallen pregnant really quickly and thought, oh, just get it done soon, and then, you know, it'll happen eventually, don't stress too much. Just go and get your bloods done right away. And then you can always replenish any nutrients you need as early as possible. But ideally, don't wait until it's like second trimester and you feel horrid because you've become deficient so quickly.
Absolutely. So in terms of some of the nutrients you mentioned, like choline and iodine, can you talk about some of the food sources that we might find those particular nutrients in, and when you might choose to supplement over increase the food consumption?
Yeah, so choline is found particularly in meats. So, you know, liver is a really good source. Beef is a really good source. It's also found in egg yolks. Egg yolks are a great source. And then some plant-based foods in smaller amounts like peanuts or peanut butter and edamame beans. So often I will get women to supplement choline through their pregnancy at some point, typically in their third trimester, just because the requirements and from what we're seeing on in studies are very high compared to what our nutrient recommendations are. Like in terms of, say, in pregnancy, I think it's recommended to have like 440 or 450 milligrams of choline a day. But we're seeing in studies that children are having much better cognitive performance if their mum's having around 900 milligrams through the pregnancy, particularly in the third trimester. So that's the time, obviously, that rapid brain development is happening and everything like that. So typically choline is one that you would want to supplement. Check that it's in your prenatals. Sometimes prenatals will have them, depending on what brand it is. But as it sort of depends on the person. Like, you know, if you're not eating any of those foods, if you're a vegan, like it's probably likely that you're going to need a supplement. But if you're really vigilant, you're really on top of making sure that you're getting enough of those nutrients every single day, then you might not need a supplement at all. So I think it always comes back to the individual's diet. I mean, personally, I obviously try my best to eat the healthiest diet as I possibly can, but until 26 weeks, I had really bad nausea in my pregnancy, and I just did not want to eat certain foods, and I just knew that I needed to take a supplement, you know, to be able to get the amount that my body needed, and that my baby needed. So that's really important, I guess. And then with, you know, nutrients like iron, that's another really important one. Again, that's one that I would recommend most women supplement through pregnancy. You know, iron is in beef. It's a little bit in chicken and fish and those sorts of things. Red meats will be your best source of iron. And then we've got some plant-based foods like low amounts in cooked spinach, low amounts in green peas, dried figs, those sorts of things. But the amount of iron that women need in pregnancy is just nowhere, like we could not get it, you know, from our diet, especially in your second, third trimester, like end of second trimester, third trimester, unless you have like hemochromatosis or, you know, amazing iron stores and you're just this superhuman woman, it's most likely that you're going to need some sort of iron supplement in your second and third trimester. And then iodine, like for example, like iodine and folate, these are nutrients that it's recommended that we do supplement them through pregnancy and breastfeeding. It's sort of not like, oh yeah, just try and get it through your diet. Unless you know you're getting enough iodine in your diet, then I would definitely still be recommending a supplement. There are like food-based supplements that you can use, like for example, Foraged for You, for example, that does have a lot of iodine in there. And if women are on that, then I recommend, okay, well, you're not going to need to take an iodine supplement because you would have way too much iodine then. So we need to look at what else you need to take based on your pathology. And we sort of work on it that way. It's a very long answer, but.
No, absolutely. Just reiterating the importance of individual prescription, depending on the circumstances, depending on the woman, depending on her diet, depending on what she's getting. And in terms of a prenatal multivitamin or a prenatal, is there a difference in quality between, you know, standard over-the-counter prenatals and something that you would recommend?
Yeah, definitely. So I think with prenatals, like I always say that they're a good all-rounder, right? But they're not individual for you. And just like off the back of what I was saying, there's so many different factors, you know, that could impact what you need to supplement in pregnancy. So if you're only taking a prenatal and you haven't really looked into your bloods, I would recommend you do, because, you know, a prenatal would just be the standard nutrients that women need in pregnancy, basically. And if that's right for you, maybe, but it might not be. Prenatals will vary in terms of what nutrients and what form of nutrients are in that supplement, basically. So standard over-the-counter ones could also be like good quality practitioner supplements as well. Like there's, for example, the Eagle Tresos Natal, which you can buy over-the-counter, that I still think is a good quality natal. So it's always about, yeah, what's in there and what forms the nutrients are in. So our pregnancy nutrition course does talk a lot about that. So it's just good general information to know, okay, these are the forms of the nutrients I should be having. But then you can always look at the labels too and just, is there folate? Is there methylfolate in there? Is there iodine in there? Is there vitamin D in there? That's a really important one. Lots of natals won't contain vitamin D. Is there choline in there? So check those nutrients in there. And, you know, that's a good sort of way of going about making sure it's a good quality one. But there are good quality natal supplements you can just purchase over the counter. It doesn't always have to be prescribed by a practitioner. It's just about knowing which ones. And then also, like I said, sometimes you will need practitioner grade supplements or a practitioner to prescribe you supplements because you are deficient in X, Y, and Z.
Yeah, awesome. So much valuable information for any pregnant women listening to the show. And so this is your second pregnancy. Is there things that you're doing differently this time compared to your first pregnancy in regards to preparing or supporting your body through food?
100%. So this time I will say has been a different experience because there's been not so much time to focus on my pregnancy and myself, but I do have, you know, 10 weeks until my due date. So whenever the baby comes, we'll see. But now is probably the time that I am going to be really focusing on myself a little bit more and changing my supplement regime to sort of prepare for birth and prepare for postpartum. I think the, you know, things that I prepared for the most, you know, with my first pregnancy was more postpartum. Like through pregnancy, I sort of was just, you know, taking it as it comes, I guess, and just upping my supplements at certain times and everything like that. But yeah, this postpartum planning will be different in terms of I have a 1.5-year-old as well. So it will be a lot of focus on foods that are really going to nourish my body, but also foods that he will eat because I want to like prep things in the freezer for his lunches and his dinners, but I just need it to be for me as well. So it has to be nourishing for my body to repair and heal. So that's a fun experiment, but he actually loves all the recipes in Nourish Postpartum. So Shannon and I wrote Nourish Postpartum, obviously, which is a postpartum book about postpartum health. And it contains recipes in there as well to, you know, prepare for birth and to sort of support your body repairing after birth. And a lot of the recipes in there he absolutely loves. So it's made my life really easy.
I love that. And what are some of your favorite recipes from the book?
Yeah, so I really love at the moment, like a lot more of like the meat-based recipes. One of my favorites is the beef and vegetable lasagna. It's just like got a layer of beef mince on the bottom, but then it has like pumpkin and eggplant, and the top layer is cauliflower, like pureed cauliflower. And it's so delicious. Like it's really yummy and my whole family loves it. And I would never thought that my son and my husband would love eating pureed cauliflower, but they love it. So it's a great thing for us to all get lots of veggies in. And it's a really nice one for postpartum because it's like warming and nourishing, but it's got those carbs in there too to, you know, really sort of support that energy and everything like that. That one's a good one.
Amazing. All right, so just to finish off, if you could give yourself like your first, when you had your first pregnancy, is there anything that you wish you knew then that you know now in regards to pregnancy, birth, nutrition?
So I think like I was reflecting on this the other day because I was sort of thinking about how I can support myself, you know, after birth this time with a toddler. And honestly, like last time and this time I've had nausea, you know, both times, but I've had like really good pregnancies. I had a good birth last time. So I feel like pretty calm and confident going into or continuing with my pregnancy and going into birth. And I think the things that I need support or need to support myself with or have learned from last time is probably more like the transition, you know, back to work and around 6 months postpartum. You know, I think that was probably the time that I found the most challenging. Like I had a great postpartum experience and I wouldn't say that by challenging, I found it not possible or I was struggling to cope or anything like that. But I think at 6 months postpartum, it was like very much getting a bit chaotic in terms of there's so much going on. And I think that's probably the time that I'm going to need the most support for this time around, because obviously I'm still planning to go back to work with two and there's going to probably be the same challenges and everything like that there. So that's probably my biggest learning. It's not always just the few weeks after birth, I guess, that can be challenging. It sort of continues through your whole motherhood journey, and that's not meant to be a negative thing at all. I think it's just something that we should all know so we can continue to support our health beyond postpartum. Like postpartum should be forever, and we sort of always need that support, you know, for our bodies to be able to function best, who cope best, to respond to stress the best. So that's probably what I'm going to put into place. And that's, for me, is going to actually be starting, well, really now. Like, the more I stay on top of my health now, the more I stay on top of my health after the baby comes and continue to prioritize my health all the way up into their 6 months, I'm going to be so much more resilient at that time. Versus, I think last time I sort of got to 4 months and then I started working a lot more, just certain things for my health started falling through the cracks because I was focusing on someone else, started like meal prepping for someone else, like all of those things. So now I'm like very much aware, no, I need to prioritize myself beyond that time and I'll be more resilient for that.
Yeah, I absolutely love that. I think there's just so much focus on that first 40 days and there's more awareness now of the postpartum period, which is amazing, but probably not enough recognition of that transition, whenever that is, for women who are returning to the workforce and how that looks, because it's often a time when baby's starting solids, where there is a lot of change in baby's development. And as the mother, you're trying to adjust to returning to work, still adjusting to being a mother. And then one of the first things to go can often be looking after yourself.
Exactly. And it's such a huge shift in your identity again. Like, you stop, like, you might keep working through that time, or you have your baby and then it's a bit of a shift in your identity. But then when you go back to the workforce, or, you know, don't go back, it can happen at any time, that change in identity as well. So I think that, plus a nutrient deficiency, plus, you know, starting solids, plus, you know, being sleep deprived, all of those things, like, you can understand why postpartum depletion happens. It's not just the few weeks after birth or 3 months after birth. It can be 6 months, 12 months, 2 years. You know, the more we support ourselves in the early postpartum time, the better, but that support has to continue. I don't want anyone to think that, you know, once you finish your pregnancy, you're all good. Like, I like to think of, like, pregnancy as, like, you know, it's like a warm up to what postpartum and motherhood will be. I think postpartum is also a warm up to what motherhood will be. Give me a one over a toddler any day.
Absolutely. What sort of strategies have you thought of that you might put in place around that 6 month mark, or that kind of transition back to work, in order to give yourself more support?
Yeah, so I think I have a great support system around me. My family, you know, is so, so supportive. But I think for me, like, family support wasn't enough. I think I needed, like, for example, daycare. Like, Hudson's 18 months and he just started daycare. So that's been like a life change. And he's going like one day a week. He's there right now, but I'm like, oh my God, like, this is like daycare's the best thing ever. So that's been good. But also, like, preparing Hudson's purees, like, all of that sort of thing. We did like purees and baby led weaning. all together. And I think if I had just started that a little bit earlier and had a bit more of a freezer stash, I think he was like just turned 6 months and I was like, oh, now I have to prepare all this food. So I'll start doing all of that for this baby earlier on and just like take little bits of our food out and just freeze it. So it's like, I don't have to think about that, you know, it stays good for 3 months in the freezer. He'll be fine. And then definitely prioritizing, you know, things for myself. You know, I think at that 6 months, that's when I lost the priority of me. Like, I went back to work, so all the time that I had for me was like more back to work. So it was like, I was like either working or, you know, really focusing on Hudson. So it's just like, I need to still do my appointments, to still exercise, to still, you know, make myself lunch and dinner and, you know, really prioritize those things. And, you know, I spoke with my partner about it and he's so supportive and so helpful. But even with all of his help, I still wasn't able to be like, no, I'm going to do this for myself. I was like, I have more important things to do. So like, I guess focusing on me is like a really high importance and a priority, even when there's things on your task list that still need to be done. That's probably what I'll be focusing on more.
Yeah, amazing. And there's only so many hours in the day, isn't there? Especially with what will be 2 under 2 for you.
I know, but I'm so excited. Like, I'm just like, ooh, I'm really excited to see what it's going to be like. Everyone's like, are you nervous? And I'm like, I'm just sort of like, maybe it's like secret anxiety that's turning into excitement. It's just all this adrenaline. But no, I'm just super excited to have 2 under 2. I think it'll be a really fun time. Yeah. Also chaotic, but also really fun.
Yeah. Do you know what you're having?
It's a boy.
Oh, that's so exciting. Yeah. Is your son excited?
He doesn't really understand that it's like, yeah. He understands baby and like that sort of thing now. And like, sometimes he'll like point at my belly and be like, baby. And then he'll point at his belly and be like, baby. I don't know. Just in my, so I think like we're slowly getting there, but it's going to be a shock to the system when the baby arrives for sure. Yeah.
Of course. Yes, and it's really nice. I've chatted with practitioners in the past who have been pregnant, but often practitioners who are pregnant with their first. So it's really interesting to have an insight of someone who is preparing for their second, and to be able to reflect on the things that you did with the first and that journey, and what teachings and lessons you learned from that to then apply to the second.
100%. And you know, it's so funny because you can only go in with like a little bit of knowledge though. Like, you just know what worked for you last time, but this is going to be a different baby. So I like to always go into my births and my pregnancies and my postpartums with like the mindset of like, I'm like a very like set the bar real low sort of person, and then you might be like happy about the outcome because you don't know what you're going to get, right? And like, that sounds a bit negative, but it isn't. Like, I'm excited and I'm very positive about it, but you know, you never know what you're going to get. It's just going to be like a sort of like pulling something out of a hat. So I'm just excited to see, yeah, what it holds. And I think there will be moments that it will be challenging and probably whole new challenges. And I'm sure if you spoke to me in another 18 months, I'd be like, no, I didn't need support at that time at all. But it's good to go from last time and then sort of go into it with like that knowledge, but also being like, whatever happens, happens, and I'll just have to adapt as I go. I think the biggest takeaway is like, as I have to adapt, don't lose that priority of myself, because it's so easy to do. That's the last thing usually on your list, but really it's the most important, because my boys wouldn't be thriving if I wasn't thriving.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Such an important piece of advice. So in terms of resources, I'll link in the show notes a link to your course and your website and consultations, as well as your book. Is there anything else that you have out there that you want to share with the listeners in terms of useful things that you either read during your pregnancies or things that you have available for clients that might be useful?
100%. So there are a few books, actually. I love books. And we didn't really touch too much on gestational diabetes. Obviously, we have a section on our course on gestational diabetes. We have a section also like in our recipe hub with like balanced meals and those sorts of things as well. But there's a great book called Real Food Pregnancy. That's a really good one for anyone who might be at risk of gestational diabetes or who already has been diagnosed. And then another book that I really loved is called Gentle Birth, Gentle Mothering. It's a beautiful book about pregnancy and birth and mothering. And yeah, I really enjoyed reading that one. So I would recommend those two.
Okay, thank you. I'll share those ones as well. Well, thank you so much for your time. And as I said, I will leave some links. So if anyone wants to find Alana or her beautiful recipe book, which I would highly recommend getting a copy of in preparation for your postpartum period, I will link that in the show notes.
Perfect. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Don't forget to subscribe and share this with other pregnant women or other women that you think deserve to understand this information. It is my mission to share this knowledge with women because this is something that I believe that we should all be taught.